if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 145. This is our 2021 Century Tournament of Champions episode. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss the 2021 PGA Tour kickoff in Hawaii. Good morning, PW. How are you?
Good morning, Steve, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to listeners. How did you enjoy the festivities?
Yeah, it was different.
Mooted.
It's about the only way. The only way you can describe life at the moment, isn't it? But yeah, no, it was nice to spend some time with the immediate family. A real shame not to see the extended family, but hey, that's the world that we live in right now, isn't it? And live in hope that things will be better by this time next year.
I had one bet over the Christmas period, and it lost. And then from that point on, I never backed a horse again for the whole... And I watched a lot of horse racing over Christmas, and I didn't... I was strong. I backed Epitont at some ridiculous odds on price at Kempton, and it lost. So that was my betting over the Christmas and New Year period.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have a little break from it. I have a little dabble with the football now and again, but other than that, no. It's I did have a little look at Altior when he was when it was racing, decided to leave that alone, which was a good move in the end.
All of the short odds on horses, apart from Altior and Epitont, won, I think. Yeah. And I was hovering on the Altior one the day after, and for God's sake, Steve, put your phone away.
Yeah.
So I didn't back that one. Mm. Anyway. Completely off-piste. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly, like I did over Christmas. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. That's all fully up to speed for this Century Tournament of Champions. I'll run through my predictor model later on in the pod, my top 10. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. Paul is available on Twitter at Golf Betting. I'm available at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. That's up to 5,700 members as we sit here now. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. We also place this podcast now on YouTube. And I don't know about you. I'm quite an avid podcast listener. I tend to listen to quite a few podcasts now on YouTube.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know. It just seems less hassle to me. They end up on my profile and I just play them. If you do listen to this podcast on YouTube, by the way, listeners, it would be fantastic if you could like the show. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Now, we went through quite a few at the end of 2020. I have no reviews. So, listeners, please give us a 5-star review and I will be reading it out. Leave your name in the review. I'll read out your review for the Sony Open show, which is next week. Right, that's the introduction done. 2021 Century Tournament of Champions. I always quite like this event.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, it's great to kick the year off with what's always a nice high profile event. It's the time difference which always gets me, because you get all excited about the event starting, and then the TV coverage doesn't start until 10 o'clock UK time in the evening.
And you can't watch any live golf effectively unless you're some kind of nutcase over here who clearly hasn't got children. But yes, As ever with COVID, I mean, Paul and I are in the UK. We've just received a... you know you're in trouble when the Boris Johnson announcement is going to be on TV at 8 o'clock. You know you're in trouble. And he closed down all of the schools yesterday, or from today. So we're in this COVID world again where apparently you can't leave the house unless you're going to get some food or a bit of exercise. So that's where we're at in the UK. Well, sorry, in England. I think it's the same in Scotland and Wales. I know that over in the United States, if you're listening over there, it differs from state to state. So we're still in this COVID world. And the COVID world is actually... this is a segue, by the way. It's actually changed the makeup of this field. Because clearly, Century Tournament of Champions has always been, until this point, a purely winners event. So the winners of the calendar year building up to this first January tournament. Now, though, because there were less tournaments last year, we have a situation where there were 17 qualifiers for this via the 2020 Tour Championship. So effectively, if you made the top 30 in the FedEx Cup Series playoffs last season.
Yeah.
You also qualify for this now. So there's quite a few non-winners in it. Just to be clear, 45 players could have played this, but three haven't. One being Jim Herman, who's injured, and two being European... And two being Rory McIlroy and Tyrrell Hatton, who you would assume are going to be playing Abu Dhabi in a fortnight. I think Rory's already said that he is.
Rory's in Abu Dhabi. Hatton's playing the Dubai Desert Classic and the week after, yeah.
But a trip to the mid-Pacific probably isn't going to do their body clock the world of good, is it? I suppose that's the way they're looking at it. Yeah. So, by my reckoning, we've got a field of 42, and 15 of those are non-winners from last year. In fact, two of them have never won on the PGA Tour, one being Abraham Anser and one being Scottie Scheffler. So, it's a hybrid kind of field, this. But you've got to say, I mean, the quality's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the best ever, isn't it, in terms of the rating?
That's what I've heard. It's the highest rated in terms of official world golf ranking points ever. Mm. And you're seeing DJ at sixes heading the market. JT at sevens. We're recording this early Tuesday morning in the UK. John Rahm at 15 to 2. There was a tickle of 8 to 1 about him when the prices first came out on Monday. Xander's at 10s. And Bryson DeChambeau at 11-1, which we were talking off mic. I thought that was quite a good price considering he was the runaway favourite for the Masters last time he played.
Yeah, there's still a bit of reaction to Bryson's price, isn't there, depending how he appears to be playing. And we saw that again before he won the US Open, where it
25-1.
Yeah, had gone off the boil a bit, and he did a couple of starts before out to 25-1, and then suddenly bang, and you're looking at the price and thinking, bloody hell, that was a good price in hindsight. But was he fifth favourite this week? So
fifth, yeah.
Yeah, clearly.
Behind Xander, which is crazy, but then Xander's got such a great course record, hasn't he?
Yeah.
First and second in the last two times he's visited here, the Plantation course. We then drift slightly to Patrick Reed at 16, who is a real horse for a course. Cantlay and Matsuyama at 18s. Webb at 20s. Finau, you're talking about a winners only event. You've got Tony Finau in it. It does make me titter. 22-1 for Tony. T4 Tony. Victor Hovland at 22-1. And then we're out to 28 with Morikawa. Berger at 30s. English, who hasn't won since 2013. He's in this winners only event at 33-1. And then out to Scottie Scheffler and Cam Smith with the Joakim Niemann and Sung Jae Im all at 40-1. But yeah, quality field. I mean, you've still got the likes of Champ, Scott, Kisner. Kisner at 66s, I thought was a good price. Especially in his second last time he played.
Yeah, there's a lot you can make a case for, isn't there? Further down. Decent quality field.
It is a good field. It's a very good field. Let's talk about the course, shall we? To say it's unique is kind of an understatement. It's a 7,596-yard par 73. And I don't think they play... Well, not they certainly don't on the PGA Tour. They don't play another par 73.
No, there used to be one. I think it was the Trophée Hassan II used to be played on 73.
Yeah.
This is a bit different, isn't it? With five... there's only three par threes, isn't there? I
think three par threes and 11 par fours.
Mm.
And just you would assume with a 73 it'd have five par fives, but it's got four par fives, 11 par fours, and only three par threes. So one of the things that I looked at in the predictor model is someone that so far this season's been doing very well on par four scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Makes logical sense. And when you look at the split of winners here, a lot of them have equaled. In previous years, if you look at the way that they accumulated their score, I'm looking here a couple of when was this? Dustin Johnson in 2018, he actually shot 12 under on the par fours and 12 under on the par fives. So, you can get to double figure digits here. I mean, going back to Jordan Spieth when he won at that crazy 30 under total or something. Oh, Justin Thomas, rather. 4 under on the threes, 13 under on the fours, and he was only 5 under on the fives when he won here for the first time. So if you can... there's something crazy here, like, I think it's 8. 8 sub 425-yard par fours.
Yeah, and this is the point, isn't it? If you get your drive away on these, and they're big old fairways as well, aren't they? If you get your drive away here, then you're just having a short iron or a wedge into a lot of these greens. And if you get your proximity right, you're going to be scoring a lot of scoring well. You're going to be making a lot of birdies.
Now, the course itself, it's a Court and Crenshaw 1991 original. It featured a 2019 renovation, which came into play for the first time last year at the 2020. Tournament of Champions. And when you read through the detail, Bill Corse said that he wanted the course to play firmer and faster ongoing, because when you had Spieth taking it apart 30 under, you actually go back to early, go back to when this was held here the first few years. Scores were quite tough. Mm. 11, 12, 13 under was winning. And then over the years, as the course deteriorated, the amount of wind that the course receives subsided. Scoring got to that crazy 30 under total with speed. So they renovated it. They renovated all the greens. They re-grassed them with Bermuda Tiff Eagle.
Yeah.
I think before they may have been champion. I might be talking out of turn there. Don't take that on. I'm just talking rubbish, I think. I think they were always Tiff Eagle, but they've refreshed them with Tiff Eagle. They recontoured them. They've made the greens apparently less contoured. They've made them bigger. They are massive. I mean, you're talking about wide fairways, which they are. They're over 60 yards wide on average. Mm. A normal PGA Tour course, you're looking at 28 to 30. US Open, you were looking at 18 to 22 yards. And now we're talking 60. So again, if you're just looking at a picture here of a player, I mean, the fact that Patrick Reed excels around here, he's one of the most inaccurate drivers you'll ever find. I mean, I remember him at the DP World Tour Championship that middle, was it the second week of December?
Yeah.
And his driving was absolutely shocking. Every time I watched him drive the ball, it was in the rough or it was just nowhere near.
No. His short game, though.
And his short game. I think he made, it was like 8 strokes gained total with his chipping and around the green game.
It was just like Houdini that week. He was absolutely incredible around the greens.
And yeah, you can see why he does well here, because actually, even someone as inaccurate as Reed will be hitting 65 to 70% of fairways. And he can bang the ball at long distance. And when you've got hands like he's got in terms of 80, 90, 100 yards and in, you can make scores.
Mm.
Especially on these par fours that are short. To me, I remember when Zach Johnson won here, I always had this completely 100% focused on bombers. Oh, bombers win here. It has to be a bomber. But actually, you go through the winners list in the past. Jeff Ogilvie wasn't exactly a bomber, was he? He won here twice on the trot. Jonathan Bird, you had Stevie Stricker, Jordan Spieth, we've had Reed win here, and we've had Zach Johnson. You haven't got to be a bomber.
Some fantastic putters in there as well, wasn't there?
Yeah. For me, it's about great wedge game. Someone also that can take advantage with long, especially on the par fives. If you've got a fantastic long iron game, I think that's a real advantage around here. Mm. And also, this course doesn't exactly play to the yardage as well, because it's a coastal course. There's a hell of a lot of undulation and blind shots here, blind tee shots. Shots that professionals don't face week in, week out. A lot of undulation, both up and down. They say it's the hardest walk for caddies of the whole year. You know, it's kind of comparable, if not worse, than Augusta National in terms of the elevation changes.
Yeah.
So you get blind shots, blind drives. And you also can get some serious wind here. And of course, you know, I love it this time of year when you start talking about the trade winds or the Kona winds. It's trade winds again. This golf course is set for trade winds, which are from the northeast and the east. Tends to make the course play shorter. And from what I'm seeing, the trade winds this year aren't anywhere near as strong as last year. So when you look at that winning score last year, it collapsed from Xander 23 under in 2019 with JT, Patrick Reed and Xander all making a playoff at 14 under last year. And when you read player interviews and you can remember the recaps from the rounds, a lot of the trouble clearly was that it was blowing 30 to 40 miles an hour for a couple of for 3 days. And also, JT said in one of his interviews, when they were putting pins at the front of greens, because these greens were brand new and totally and utterly unreceptive, you just couldn't get the ball anywhere near.
No. You're going way past it.
You were going way past it, or you were trying to just almost, you know, a bit of standard linksy type golf where you're trying to get the ball just to chase up.
Yeah, interesting to see how they've changed. You know, cause a year further down the line, they should have bedded in a bit. They should be a bit more receptive, shouldn't they? Often you get with these brand new greens, they are really bumpy and firm, aren't they? So, yeah, 12 months down the line, perhaps a little bit of respite.
Now, I'm looking at the wind forecast for Thursday right now on the laptop in front of me, and they're looking as if we are we're going to be seeing 15 to 20 on Thursday. We're going to be seeing 15 to 20 on Sunday, which for round here isn't that strong, and Friday and Saturday it's literally tranquility city. So I think this is going to be far lower scoring this year. As you said, you would assume that the greens have bedded in 12 months. They've had plenty of foot traffic now. They'll be softer. And when you're seeing that kind of wind forecast for the Friday and Saturday, I think they can be taking this golf course apart. I wouldn't be surprised if that Xander kind of totals in play.
Yeah.
23, 24 under.
It feels like a, particularly for par 73, it feels like it's going to be in excess of 20 under, doesn't it? Given that forecast.
8,700 square feet greens with that Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. And you mentioned a while ago, you know, JT can be a phenomenal putter. He's won here twice. Dustin Johnson's won here twice. When he's on his game, again, another fantastic putter. Zach Johnson, one of the best of all time with the flat stick. Jordan Spieth, well, you don't need to... when Jordan was in his pomp, you know, he 30-foot putts were going in with crazy regularity. And even Xander can be a mighty good putter. You don't and Patrick Reed, you don't tend to see complete and utter Jason Coke rags like winning this in terms of their putting ability. Or dare I say, who should I put in there in terms of bad putters? I'm just trying. I mean, to me, someone like a Colin Morikawa, where putting's the weak point of his game.
Yeah. I would have said Adam Scott once upon a time, but I look at Adam Scott's putting stats recently and he's been putting incredibly well from what I can see.
He actually headed up my 8-week putting average stat.
Yeah. He popped in a few of the numbers I looked at. And again, that was another one of them. He's clearly doing something right with his putting. Got a new putter as well, I saw on Twitter yesterday, that he's taking on into the tournament this week. So interesting to see how he goes on that.
He's got a new putter. And the other thing that I noticed of significant, for me, importance was the fact that John Rahm switched from TaylorMade to Callaway.
Mm.
And at this time of year, I hate golfers that have changed equipment manufacturer.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to assess, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is what I said in my betting preview, which is clearly detailed and available at Golf Betting System for all listeners. If you're trying to split hairs with that top five, arguably the top five in the world at the moment, you've got to take something like that and say, well, actually, that's the reason I wouldn't back Rahm. Because statistically, you won't get rid of him, because his statistics are always fantastic. But yes, clearly he will have been practicing with those Callaway clubs for a length of time. But yes, it's a good enough reason for me not to like him in that at that kind of 15-2 price point. So we reckon the weather's going to be more favourable for the players. 24 degrees pretty much throughout, so a nice comfortable 24 degrees Celsius. I'm just looking at key trends from a skill set perspective. So what I do, I've taken 2010 through 2020, the winners here, and I look at their traditional stats and their for that period of time, and just see where each winner ranked in the various different skill sets of the game. So averaging it out, Ogilvy through to JT last year, driving distance 12th. Bearing in mind, this field is usually, 30 players?
Yeah.
So 12th would be upper third. But it's not pure bombers. Driving accuracy, 17th. Greens in reg, 9th. Proximity to hole, 10th. Scrambling, 8th, which is quite high. And putting average, 3rd.
Yeah.
So, inevitably, especially with these tournaments where it tends to be a scenario where you've got to shoot 23, 24 under, it's all about converting those chances, isn't it? I think one of the really interesting stats for here, though, is though that year in, year out, this course, the Plantation course at Kapalua, traditionally ranks inside the top 10 most difficult courses in terms of proximity to hole every year.
Yeah, do you think that's a factor of the size of the greens?
Size of the greens, I think the contour, they were quite severely contoured greens as well.
Yeah.
I think also you're coming in on quite a few holes with uneven lies, and that doesn't help, does it? Most of these fairways are canted. And you get a lot of balls above or below the feet, and that it all adds to the difficulty in terms of that proximity number. Especially in a windy kind of renewal. And even when it's blowing 15 to 20, that's quite a significant wind to actually be managing.
Yeah, it is. The kind of topography of the course does negate it a little bit, because you can, as you've seen in recent years, you can still play here when it's blowing 30, 40 miles an hour. And it just makes it tougher rather than impossible. But it keeps them honest, I think, without causing them too many problems.
Winning scores, 2020 was JT at 14 under, Xander was 23 under in 19, DJ was 24 under in 2018. Justin Thomas was 22 under in 2017. I scored with Thomas both years that he won here, 2017 and 2020. I'm about to sneeze, but it's right. Yeah, anyway, I can fight that off, I think. Jordan Spieth won at 30 under and Patrick Reed at 21 under. So since 2015, those are the winning scores. And the other thing I find interesting, and I always look at for each golf tournament, are the winning prices of champions that we've had. So bearing in mind, it's a short field and it traditionally featured only winners, so very, you know, an excellent field each year. The average from 2010 through to 2020 is 16-1. The past seven renewals, since they went to this split system where the season starts in the fall, that comes down to 14-1. And since 2016, we've had Jordan Spieth at 5-1, Dustin Johnson at 15-2, and Justin Thomas at 11-2. So three of the last five winners of this have been single-digit odds. The other two were Xander at 22-1 and Justin Thomas at 22-1.
Yeah, no massive shocks, are there?
The biggest price we've ever seen here, Paul. Yeah, well, and the nature of the field, I suppose. But the biggest price we've seen win here was Jonathan Bird in 2011, who used to be one of these resort course monsters, didn't he, Jonathan Bird? Give him 25 under golf course and all of a sudden he'd appear from nowhere. He won here at 50-1 in 2011. If I remember correctly, he came fresh from winning the Shriners Open, where he won with a hole-in-one in the playoff.
Yeah, in the dark, yeah.
Beating Martin Laird in the dark. And he then didn't play until he came here, and then he won the Tournament of Champions as well.
Yeah, right on top of his game back then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a decent player, top 50 in the world. If we're looking at this golf course from a strokes gain perspective, and I've gone back to 2016 Jordan Spieth, so Spieth, Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Xander and JT last year. Again, doing the same exercise, averaging out their skill sets. Strokes gained off the tee, fourth. Strokes gained on approach, fifth. Strokes gained around the green, sixth. Strokes gained tee to green, second. Strokes gained putting, fifth. Doesn't really tell you a lot. I would suggest, though, that you would need to be in the top two in the strokes gained tee to green category to win this week. JT was second last year. Xander was third. And then before that, DJ, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth were all first strokes gained tee to green.
Yeah, and I suspect that's a lot of this to do with proximity, isn't it? And, you know, as you said, it's one of the tougher tracks to actually get close to the pin. But if you are one of those players who is getting close, making your putts on these Bermuda greens, then you're going to give yourself a great chance, I think.
Yes. He was 13th for strokes gained putting last year, JT.
Yeah.
For me, it's not so much distance of putts made. It's going to be, again, creating enough of these shorter chances to then make the conversion.
Yeah.
I think three putting around here on greens at an 8,700 feet, again, it does kind of lead you to decent putters, even if it's a situation where natural born putters that can make a 60 feet lag putt up a quite a severe contour against the grain on Tiff Eagle. There's a lot of different parts that go into the equation of putting around here.
Yeah.
There's grain, there's uphill, there's downhill. There's the fact that, you know, do you take into account the break towards the sea or don't you? Is it a straight putt? There's a lot of complexity on these greens. And, of course, you can get 15 to 20 mile an hour winds blowing at you across those greens this week as well, and at least two of the days. So I don't think, for me, it's a pure 100% ball strikers course with someone that can't putt. I think you've got to have some kind of natural ability with the flat stick eventually. Yeah. I think I've whittled on more than enough, actually. Who would you take from the top five? Not that you're a win only. Not that you're a win only backer.
I haven't backed one in the top five. I may do. You've almost convinced me on one, but I'll leave them to you. My knee-jerk reaction was Xander. You know, you look through his last win of the tour was here, wasn't it, back in 2019? And
yeah,
it's come very close since. Although I guess you could, you know, you've virtually classed that tour championship effort where he was the best scorer of the week as a win, although it didn't, it obviously doesn't count as a traditional win in that sense. But he's been putting really well. I mean, you look at his stats, he's been putting really well. He's been hitting greens, scrambling well, got a fantastic record here. I was all ready to pull the trigger, and then you find that he's just recovering from COVID. He's
been saying, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
he's good insight, Paul. Like
he's I hadn't noticed until a day or two, before. Over the back end of the weekend yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't spot that one.
There's been reports that he's still a bit fatigued, which you'd expect. You know, COVID hits people in different ways, doesn't it? Some people just brush it straight off. Some people will get a more severe or, you know, a flu-y type symptoms, which can take time to overcome. So that's kind of put me off, because it is a bit of a slog, isn't it? It's a bit of a trek, this course. And if you're not feeling absolutely 100% in terms of your well-being and your general fitness, then it might not be the best of ways to start your year. I mean, he may come out and he may be absolutely firing all cylinders, and 10-1 might prove to be a decent score. But I kind of spotted that before I pulled the trigger, which was either fortunate or unfortunate, because it's put me off regardless one way or the other. But he was my knee jerk. If I was going to take one, it would be the guy that you've backed out of the top five. So I won't steal your thunder on that respect.
I was quite pleased with the price I got on him, to be honest, because he won here last year at 11-2. And I was expecting a similar kind of price. The first show on the board was Bet365. They were 11-2. I think William Hill came in at 11-2. Or was it? No, sorry, 13-2, wasn't it? They came in at. And then all of a sudden, Unibet popped up at 15-2. And I'd made my mind up over Christmas I was going to put him up. In fact, I made my mind up on all three before Christmas. Clearly, if there'd been something like an equipment change announced, or like you said, a COVID or something like that, I'd have changed. But yeah, I thought 15-2 on Justin Thomas was a decent price. And if you wanted the perfect golf course for someone like JT, I think this is it, isn't it? First 2017, third 2019, first 2020. I'm not one for backing defending champions, but he's already defended a title in the past. He actually won the 2015 and 2016 CIMB Classic over in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
Those were the first ever PGA Tour titles he won, and he defended successfully. And that reminds me of sort of when Daniel Berger did that at Southwind. I think that was 16, 17. But yeah, there's not many that do that. So he can defend. And, he just seems to love this golf course. He's the kind of guy, it all boils down to the flat stick with Justin. If he's got his putting game with him, he's difficult to beat.
Yeah.
And actually, his putting of late has been good. It's been very, very good. He ranks second in my rolling 8-week window on strokes gained putting. And he also ranks in the top 5 for putts per GIR, putting average. So if you look at the traditional stats. Now, the strokes gained putting won't include Mayakoba, where he played in December. But the putting average, putts per GIR, does include that number. And he putted well over in Mexico. And that's the other thing that I've noticed with this. Bit of insight that I always like to look at. 11 of the last 12 winners here all played competitive golf in the previous December. Now, when the world was normal, that could have been in Australia.
Yeah.
With the Australian Open, Australian PGA, and the events they play down there. Or it would have been at Tiger's Hit and Giggle, the Hero World Challenge. And or that QBE shootout that Greg Norman hosts down in Florida, the team event. And if you look at Justin Thomas, and you look at him compared to the rest of the players at that top end, Dustin Johnson we haven't seen since that emotional, tear-jerking win at Augusta National. John Rahm, we haven't seen him since Augusta National. Xander, we haven't seen him since Augusta, and he suffered with COVID. And Bryson DeChambeau, he didn't play for 5 or 6 weeks before the Masters, did he? Played the Masters poorly and hasn't played since. So, you know, if we're looking at this 11 out of 12 trend continuing, out of the top five, only JT actually passes that test.
Yeah, he
passes it quite well. 12th at Mayakoba. And then 2 weeks later, he played in the father and son PNC Championship. The fact that it's a nothing event is bug all to do it. It's the fact that he played some competitive golf in front of TV cameras, played with his dad, and they won the PNC Championship, beating Vijay Singh and his son by a shot and beating Tiger Woods and Charlie Woods. So he's had that, and that was played, guess where, in Florida on Bermuda grass greens.
Yeah. If you go down to the, you know, the most simplistic and take that factor and combine it with the recent winning scores that we've seen around here, the only person it does point you in the direction of is Justin Thomas. As I say, I think you've virtually convinced me that a kind of a win only bet on JT could be the way to go. And I tend to take notes, particularly in this event, of who you back, because you've got a particularly strong record here.
I know that you don't take any notice for the other 50-odd events of the year, but this one you actually think, I know, I'm onto something.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. See who Steve puts up and follow suit. But no, I think of the top guys, I think JT is the pick to go for. I do agree.
If I then go down below that, Reed is clearly... Reed here is absolutely fantastic, isn't he? If you actually look at the average score, and I know that we have the statistics that you pull together every week, Paul, for all of the tournaments, be that PGA Tour, European Tour, Majors and whatever. If you actually look at the event average score by the competitors, Hideki Matsuyama has the best average score for this event. He's played here three times. 2015, 2017, 2018, he's finished third, second and fourth. And Matsuyama is in no way, shape or form a natural-born putter. He hasn't won here, though, but it does show you that tee-to-green excellence and a guy that can hit the ball very well and has a great all-round game, because we know with Matsuyama, you know, the approach and the scrambling is always top-notch. He's an elite-level player. That can get you close to winning this event. I mean, we've had the likes of Gary Woodland. Again, Woodland isn't, you know, you look at Woodland, he's a tee to green guy, isn't he? He's not a natural putter over the course of his career. I know that his putting's better now than the tee to green side, but if you look at him over 5 years, Woodland is tee to green and not a putter. Mm. So you can get close here, but I think ultimately you've got to be a good putter. Streb next, 69. He's only played here once. He finished eighth. Then you get Laird. DJ, he's played here 10 times. Course average, 69.21. Webb Simpson, fourth, 69.47. And then you get Patrick Reed at 69.5. He's finished first, second, sixth and second here in six outings.
Yeah.
I just can't back Patrick Reed at 16-1. Cannot do it.
It's a difficult one. I'll talk about Reed now because I have backed him. He's the one player towards the top that I've backed. And the reason for that, I agree on the price point because we tend to look at Reed when he's a bit further out in the betting, you know, kind of 40-50-1 in the full field. This isn't a full field. It's a shorter field. Yep. It's inevitably going to be a shorter price. What got me is you mentioned in your preview, and we've talked about it quite a bit here, that putting and scrambling can tend to be the deciding factor here. And there are a few in the world who are scrambling better than Patrick Reed at the moment. I mean, if anyone watched those the performance you alluded to earlier at the Dubai DP World Tour Championship, then he was absolutely incredible around the Earth course. He was... you know, getting up and down from absolutely everywhere. And to be fair, he's been putting and scrambling incredibly well for a few months now. Going back to the Tour Championship at Eastlake, he was first for scrambling there, first for putting at the US Open. Played well again around the greens at Wentworth. 10th at the Masters overall, and he was second for putting there. So clearly there's been a trend that his short game's been particularly strong. And then, of course, he went to the Earth course, finished third there in December, so that kind of ticks the December box as well, where his short game was outstanding. Record here is fantastic. Of the players that were just outside those top five, he was the one that caught my eye. And as I say, 16-1 is... I'll take that. It's an each-way punt for me, and see if he can get himself into those paying positions.
Over 12 weeks, which are our form line, yeah, there's only Dustin Johnson with better form.
Mm.
And you've got DJ at sixes and then Reed at 16s. Next up is JT with 7-1, Rahm at 15-2. So, yes, in the top four for current form, and he's a 16-1, the biggest price of those four. So it makes logical sense, doesn't it, with such a great course record?
Yeah, good enough for me.
I just can't. I so loved Patrick Reed at the US Open. And then he got right into the top of the leaderboard, and I just thought to myself, Patrick Reed just doesn't go away when he's in contention. And then I almost swore. That Saturday came along, and I could not believe it. Yeah. It was back in the day where you could actually go to the pub, and me and the missus and two of our friends, we'd gone out for a meal. We got into my local village pub around the corner from where we live, walked in there, and the guy's got Sky on, the landlord, and the golf was on. And I kind of didn't look, because it was, and then I did look at the screen, and every time I looked at the screen, he was making a bogey.
Mm.
It was breaking my heart as I was getting more and more inebriated.
Just to soften the blow.
I couldn't believe it, mate. I think when I walked in there, it was still like in second or third spot. By the time we got out of there at like, I don't know, 12 o'clock or quarter past 12, he'd sunk into total and utter oblivion. Just could not believe it. But yeah, Reed's a good shout. He's obvious, but he's good.
Yeah.
Personally, at the price point, I would take Patrick Reed over Hideki Matsuyama.
At least
with Reed, you know that he can convert. He's a no. Matsuyama has it once in 2017, and we're getting him at 18-1.
Been a while. Bermuda Green's not his strongest of suits either, is it? So, yeah, I'd be Reed over Matsuyama.
I'd rather be taking Matsuyama at Phoenix at 18-1, something like this, personally. If we're looking at this form angle as well. So 12 weeks going back, current form. This particular individual has got 24th, 11th, 4th, 2nd and 8th in his last five outings. Now, I was on board with him when he finished 2nd, and that was at the Masters. Yeah, and he then played the Shark Shootout, as I know it, the QBE Shootout. He played it with Mark Leishman in December. They finished 8th. That's immaterial. So he played some competitive golf on Bermuda grass in December. He's not a big winner, but then he's quite young. Jumped back into the top 30 in the world last year with that fantastic finish. And when you look at this particular individual, he always tends to play his best golf from October onwards. And that kind of makes sense. He's an Australian, so Australians clearly, it would be their summer. But he seems to just play the best golf that of his career has always tended to be October through January. Now, he won the Sony Open in Hawaii last year to qualify for this. And I found him at 40-1, Cameron Smith. Cameron Smith was the first player I was going to tip in this. And that, I made that decision in the middle of December.
Yeah.
After the golf had all finished.
What kind of price were you expecting?
I wasn't expecting 40-1.
Yeah.
And that's a pleasant surprise. Mm. I thought I might get 28s or 33s, maybe.
Yeah.
And I would have moaned that it was too short. But 40-1. I thought 40-1 was manna from heaven.
Yeah. Certainly backable at that price.
Well, he's backable, and you just look at the way the guy plays. He's pretty long off the tee. He's not overly straight. And, you know, the way that he played around Augusta, his driving was kind of okay. Some of his approach play from distance was fantastic. And then when he did get in trouble, his game from 100 yards and in, you know, with the hands, was absolutely sublime, wasn't it? Mm,
yeah.
The way he was getting out of trouble. And as we know with Cam Smith, an absolutely fantastic natural putter. he kind of follows the Patrick Reed line of inquiry in terms of the way that he plays his golf.
Yeah.
Now, I think he'll play well here. He's played here once, 17, so he's got course experience. That particular outing 3 years ago, you can't argue that Smith's not a better, more mature, far more comfortable on the PGA Tour kind of player this time around than he was 3 years ago. He shot I think it was 68 on the Saturday, which was the tied third best score of the day. So he's starting to get his head around the golf tour, the golf course at that point. I think Smith's got a lot going for him this week. I really do. You look at his wins as well. Two on the European Tour, co-sanctioned Australian PGA. They played out at the Pines Valley. Is it Pines Course, I think?
Yeah.
Up at Surfers Paradise. And the two wins he's had in the States, one in Hawaii, and he won the team event down in New Orleans, all on Bermuda grass greens.
There's a pattern emerging.
Well, there's a pattern. I'll tell you what else I noticed about Smith. If you look at Smith, and you look at, you know, the tournament they play over in Korea?
Yep.
South Korea, the one, CJ Cup, and they play at the top of the mountain. Quite a long golf course overlooking the sea over in Jeju Island.
Yeah.
You look at JT's record there, it's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Gary Woodland has gone extremely close at that golf tournament as well to CJ Cup. And you look at Cameron Smith, he's got a couple of top fives at that CJ Cup event, short field event as well. That's just another thing that kind of points me towards him this week. I think Cam Smith's got a big week in him.
Mm.
So 40-1, I've gobbled that up quickly. Further out, 66 is on Kevin Kisner appeals, because we know how great he is on Bermuda grass. Is there anyone at a really big price that kind of you'd have a little
play with? Yeah. I've backed one other, so as of now, I've backed Patrick Reed, and I have backed Martin Laird at 250-1. And that price, well, he's missed his last two cuts, so you can look at his raw form line and think, well, you know, he's coming in the back of two missed cuts, and he's playing against some extremely good players here this week.
Yeah.
But prior to that, he won the Shriners. He was 10th for putting that week. That's not really his game. I mean, again, you know, you've talked about players getting into the mix who are better in terms of their ball striking than their short game. And to see a little bit of a spark with Laird's putter is interesting. Clearly, he did get the win on the back of that. But before that, he'd been pounding greens, hitting a lot of putting surfaces and not really converting. So to convert a few and get the job done was positive for him. Fourth year on debut back in 2010, second in 2012. He led the field for putting here that week. So he's clearly got on with the old surfaces here in the past. Clearly changed a little bit since, but likes the track. He talked about how he likes taking a driver. That's his default club. And this particular course forces you to take a lot of drivers. Good in the wind. I mean, it's not going to be particularly windy this week, but there were a couple of days where it's going to get up a bit and that's clearly going to play to his strengths a little bit as well. And I think he likes what he likes, doesn't he?
He is. Laird, that's exactly what I was going to say. He's a real horse for a course, isn't he? I mean, that Shriners victory.
Yeah, a couple of wins there. He got and again, he was in that playoff that Jonathan Bird won as well, wasn't he? So he's come very close a few times, or won a couple of times at the Shriners. Two top fours from three starts here. So for 250-1, with a win under his belt in his last three starts, I was quite happy to take on as an each way long shot punt.
He's another resort course specialist, isn't he? Where, you know, 23, 25 under win, that's the kind of course Laird pops up on.
Mm. When he gets a little bit of form and a little bit of a spark with that putter, then it starts making some birdies, we'll see. We'll see how he goes. But short field, you're getting six places. I've got six places each way, a fifth of the odds. And for that 250-1 on a field of just 42 players. So there's there's a fair proportion there, a fair ratio that you're going to get get an each way return out of it. So, yeah, quite happy to take that. But, yeah, they're just the two that I've done.
I think of the triple digits. I think there's a lot to be said for Martin Laird. I think that's a good angle. The other one I think's been showing a little bit of He's not 250-1. The other one that seems to be showing signs of life recently is Kevin Na.
Yeah, yeah.
125-1.
Yeah.
He's playing better golf under the surface.
If
this had bent grass greens, I'd be all over Na like a rash. Yeah. He never won on Bermuda, but he can play Bermuda in terms of fairways and rough and whatever. That's not a problem. And we know with Nah, he can top five in this, no problem at all.
Mm. Yeah, and I've got to say his name did pop up on some again. If you're looking for a comparable, you know, top, you look at someone like if a Steve Stricker's won on a track, then you're looking and thinking, well, can I pick out a player who can putt well? And Nah's a funny player, isn't he? You know, on any given week, any aspect of his game can be outstanding. But he's got a
huge ceiling and a very low floor, isn't he? He's one of those, and that from a DraftKings perspective, it depends how you play your DraftKings. If you can look for value players, sometimes Kevin Na will either kill you or it can lead to big returns on DraftKings.
Well,
it's clearly the same with betting.
Yeah,
but there's something percolating there with Na. 12th his last. One of the visits he's had here in 2012. The other really obvious pick that I had to go for towards the top end of the market was just Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
Until I really dug into the research on Hovland, I didn't realise just what he's been doing and the gravity of it. 23 years of age, 2 wins on his first full season on the PGA Tour. That he became the 5th European player since 1945 to earn multiple victories sub 24 years of age. That list includes Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, John Rahm, and Seve Ballesteros. That is some company, isn't it?
Yes, that's a decent list of names to be alongside.
He's now 14th in the world. And I just think this format is going to play so much to his strengths. Mm. Those 2 wins both came on golf courses that are on the coast. One, the Puerto Rico Open. Then one, of course, the Mayakoba Golf Classic in December. He won those tournaments both with 20 under totals. So it's not as if this guy can't pull a score together.
Yeah.
I know it's his course debut and I know course debutants don't win this that much. Daniel Chopra did, of all, bizarrely. I mean, when you see Daniel Chopra winning the Tournament of Champions, that really is a laugh, isn't it? But he won this in 2008 as a course debutant. But then you see elite names like Webb Simpson going very close when Steve Stricker won here. He finished 2nd, Simpson.
Yeah.
Jordan Spieth finished 2nd here on course debut. And John Rahm finished 2nd on course debut. You realise that someone with a real talent could turn up this week and play very, very well. And I think that's going to be Hovland, because clearly this guy is top notch. Tee to green, driving the golf ball long and straight is a real speciality. He was 7th across the whole of last year for strokes gained on approach with his irons. It's clearly the chipping and the putting. My only thing with that will be is that I'd be amazed if Victor Hovland doesn't hit 80% of greens this week, because they're
huge.
Yeah. And actually, his putting recently has been far better. And that's why I kicked myself that I never backed him the week he won at 22-1, because I'm not backing Victor Hovland at 22-1. There's no value in it. But we'd spotted and we mentioned on the podcast, and so did Barry, that his putter was warming. It was trending. And actually, you know, you just look at what he's been doing with the putter of late, Victor Hovland. This is a guy that could be one of the worst putters around professionally. But when he finds that, when he finds it, it's clearly good. He was 12th for putting average at the Mayakoba Golf Classic when he won. I think if you take people that made the cut, he was 10th for putts per GIR. And then last time out at the Earth course, which was the week after Mayakoba, so he flew from Mexico to Dubai, all the trouble with the travel and whatever, finished 3rd, didn't he, at the DP World Tour Championship.
That was impressive.
And he was in the top 3 for putting average.
Yeah, no, it was impressive. Yeah, to come straight over and, you know, with no preparation on the track whatsoever, and to perform as he did was very, very noteworthy, as you say, and decent putting on those Bermuda greens out there.
And I think that will have done him some good anyway, because that's a big tournament. Mm. You know, he was clearly mixing it at the top end of the leaderboard across Saturday and Sunday. That would have been a kind of pressure that he's not been used to in the past, you know, in a high-grade event like that.
Yeah.
And he came out and with a very strong third-place finish, what, two shots back from Westwood. So I don't think that's going to do it, will have done anything but boost his confidence even more.
Yeah.
And I just think Hovland here at 22-1 is a decent pump. I can see him really, you can tell with Victor. The only thorn in Victor's side is he can start very sluggishly. I'm just praying that he starts reasonably well on the Thursday. You know, get around the top 10, top 12 on day one, so he's in the tournament, not too far back. And then he tends to improve with time as the rounds go on. And especially on the basis this is a new golf course to him. But, you know, his record, his breakout event was that US Open at Pebble Beach, wasn't it? And he's always played well by the coast. I think he's going to love this golf course. I really do. So I've gone JT at the top win only. I've gone Victor Hovland each way, 22-1. And I have gone 40-1 with Cameron Smith. Those are my three for this week's Century Tournament of Champions. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's nice to get things back up and running. Another week of Hawaii action next week for the Sony, and then we're over to the Middle East as well. So the European Tour picks up with Abu Dhabi as well. So it's got a good few weeks of action to come in January. And, let's hope it all continues to plan over the next few weeks and months.
I don't think there's going to be much impact with professional sport, is there, at the highest level?
Shouldn't be.
They'll keep it trucking through.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Because can you imagine being locked in your house with no sports watch? I do remember. It was back in March and April, wasn't it, last year? Yeah. I do remember, yeah.
Yeah, let's not go back.
When the highlight of your day was going out for a walk along the river or something like that. Or going to the supermarket.
Yeah.
I remember those days. Mm. Well, I hope Reed and Martin Laird go well for you. Are you going to have a sneaky fiver on JT, win owner?
Yeah, I think, as I say, given your angle of attack with this in the past and success here, it all seems to point towards a Justin Thomas victory. So I think that would be the prudent thing to do.
Hmm. Good on you. Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, and, best of luck.
Do we quickly, because it'll only be the hardcore listening to this. Do you want to mention the majors competition?
Yeah, so...
That I completely forgot.
No, so have I. So as we've done for, I think this is the ninth consecutive year, our friends at Bet365 have sponsored our majors competition once again, and you can enter via email, via the Facebook group, or via Twitter. And basically, we want you to give us the name of four major champions for this year. So we want you to pick a name for the Masters, a name for the PGA Championship, a name for the US Open, a name for the Open Championship. Four separate names, one and done, effectively.
One and done, yeah.
And you get scored based on their dollar earnings on the respective event that you pick them for. So over the four events, we'll accumulate a little leaderboard of how everyone scores. And the winner will get £150 or currency equivalent as a cash prize. Second place, £75. Third place, £25. Dead easy. So essentially, just give us four names. It's got to be four different names, one for each of the four majors, and see how they fare once all the action starts later in the year. Obviously, you need to get your entries in before the first tee time at Augusta in the start of April. So there's plenty of time to enter. We'll put further details on the website. There are further details on the website. We'll put a link to that on the podcast description here, so you can find your way over and get your entries in.
I mean, we're golf nerds. We know where these things are going to happen, although I'm trying to remember where the US Open. But the PGA Championship in May is going to be played at Kiawah Island, the ocean course, which is where Rory McIlroy won. He won the PGA Championship there the last time they played there. US Open is going to be played at Torrey Pines. Wow. A US Open at Torrey Pines. That is going to be wowzers. That's a long old golf course, isn't it? 7,600 yeah. yards with like 5-inch rough.
What price Tiger, eh?
what price Bryson DeChambeau? And then, of course, the Open Championship is going to be played, and we need to start thinking about booking train tickets and the like. Royal St George's Golf Club in Sandwich, Kent.
Yeah, the one that was...
Let's pray, Paul, that we can get out of the house in mid-July and go and watch some golf, even if we have to go in some kind of breathing apparatus.
Yes, 6 months down the line, Steve, we've got to be able to go and watch a golf tournament like that.
They've already cancelled it once, and I doubt if they got pandemic insurance this time around at the same premium.
Yeah, I think the premium may have been bumped up a little bit for this year.
I agree to meet Neil Fay, who's on our Facebook group. I agree. I know he listens to the pod on occasion. I've agreed that we're going to meet him at the bar behind. Is it the fifth green or the eighth green? I know that we spent far too long there last time we went. We're going to have a few beers there, apparently.
Yeah, why not?
All I remember of Royal St George's, what an amazingly difficult links golf course that is.
Yeah, it's a cracker, isn't it?
An absolute cracker of a golf course. Yeah, so they're the courses. Kiawah Island, we've got Torrey Pines South Course for the US Open, and we've got Royal St George's for the Open. You know, throw that in with Augusta National. That's four fantastic golf courses for the majors this year.
Yeah, lots to look forward to.
Absolutely. So if you want to get your entries in, you'll find details in this podcast description. We'll put a link through to the page to, you know, how you can enter by Twitter or a Facebook group or whatever. Well, Paul, thank you very much. Been nice to have you back on the show.
Yeah. Best of luck.
We'll speak next week. And thanks to listeners again. Apple reviews. If you can give us a 5-star review and your name within that review, I will read it out at the start of the Sony Open podcast next week. Thanks for your time. I hope your bets go well, and we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.